just writing down the end of my, writing down who I am. Yes. Today, if I understand correctly, is Thursday, August 18th, 2005. We are at Freiburg New Church Assembly. This is Lecture 1, and I'm Bob Toffel, sometimes known as F. Bob. The theme is charity, and I've selected as title for our thoughts today, Charity as Daily Living. And I began my preparation and thinking about this lecture from a memory, which turned out to be correct, about how Swedenborg goes through the professions and offices and callings of his day, and saw how each of them provided opportunity for one to be charity. And we've been going through the week at the beginning talking about what is charity. Charity is love to the neighbor. Charity begins by looking to the Lord and shunning evils as sins, and then doing what is good. And the latter is what is our subject for today. Everyone who looks to the Lord and shuns evils as sin, if he or she sincerely, justly, and faithfully does the work of his or her office and employment, becomes a form of charity. This follows as a consequence from the preceding law that people are born in order to become charity, and one cannot become charity unless one perpetually does the good of use from affection and delight. And he will go on to say that by looking at the outward behavior of two people, you can't tell who is acting sincerely, justly, and faithfully. And it occurred to me that there was a good reason why he talked about how in each of the callings or professions, if one sincerely, justly, and faithfully does the work of his or her office and employment, becomes a form of charity, not so that we can look at the person who is the magistrate or the judge or the priest or the shipmaster or the commander of the army or whoever, not that we would look at them to see if they are sincerely, justly, and faithfully performing their office, although there is a certain amount of discernment that we need to do in terms of our relationship to them. But it is their business to become charity by sincerely, justly, and faithfully performing the work of their office. All the offices and employments regarded as goods of use constitute a form which corresponds to the heavenly form. And the heavenly form is such that every individual there is in some ministry, function, office, or employment, and in work. Such are all the heavenly societies that no one may be useless. Everyone there enjoys his or her own pursuit. It is the source of his or her delight. They shun idleness as one would pestilence. So it is that charity extends much further than giving to the poor and the needy, but consists in doing what is right in every task and one's duty in every office one holds every day. The reason all these things are part of love to the Lord, as was said before, is that each individual is the neighbor, but in a different way. Anyone, therefore, who does any kind of good for good's sake and acts honestly and justly for the sake of honesty and justice loves the neighbor and exercises charity. Now, those are quotes, and it applies pretty much obviously, as we can see, to breadwinners, people that are employed, people that have income from being employed. So we were talking about the other day quite earnestly and with some effort to discern how do we respond to the homeless in our society. Now, in Swedenborg's day, he did say that earthly employments correspond to the heavenly form, which is that everybody can be useful, but it doesn't really always happen because of the motive for profit. So that's what happens essentially in our society these days, the difficulty and the trauma that people have when they lose their employment. And we know people that have lost their employment, and it's almost like they lose their identity. And they have this feeling that they're, they wanted to work. And we count full employment pretty much where if there's about just 5%, right, that aren't employed. And with some, standing aside from them, we'd say, well, they may not be able to work, which there are certainly some in our society that are physically and mentally not able to work. And then there might be some that choose not to work. There's some that have lost their work through downsizing, which is what we euphemistically call it. So how do we really respond then as a society or as a community of faith? The whole realm of life work as vocation, as becoming charity, loses its weight to a person who is unemployed. Now, of course, people can be preparing for work. They can be retraining, going into education. There's certainly welfare as a safety net, as opposed to a permanent state. There are other forms of daily life that provide opportunities for charity as well. Can anybody name some of them? What's the first one you might think of, other than being a breadwinner? Thank you. That's exactly the answer I was looking for. Because there's the whole dichotomy of, it seems that a homemaker isn't bringing in income, but they are providing work that is in lieu of income because they'd have to hire someone to do many of these tasks otherwise. And in multiple professions with people that are partners in life, both being employed, then there's work. The only work then that there is the work that isn't done, as we say in our house. We look around, we say, well, the only work is the work that isn't done. Volunteerism is another aspect where people, Swedenborg, in a sense, I look at Swedenborg from one standpoint as a volunteer par excellence. He had independent income, right? And so he was then able to do to fill a lack or a void of doctrines of the New Jerusalem. He saw himself then as a servant of the Lord, and that the Lord provided him an income whereby he could then develop the doctrines for the new church that he saw coming into being, called the New Jerusalem. All of what Swedenborg talked about, and I want to go through just quickly. He went through charity and the priest, people that learn truths and by means of them lead people to the Lord as opposed to themselves. Charity and magistrates, judges, officials, civil service. So he handled the religious realm, civil service, the judiciary, military, and business, and then work and agriculture, farmers, husbandmen, vine dressers, and servants, and sailors and shipmasters, and soldiers. So he went through one after the other how if one is performing. What are the tasks? What are the goods? What to look within one's profession or calling? What is appropriate? And I will do that not just in order to have honor or not just for the pay. In every case, he talks about how there's a difference between people who are in it just for the pay or people who are in it for the pay which is necessary for the necessities of life, but also because they love it. And I wanted to add a part from an address, actually, that was quoted at the Swedenborg House of Studies graduation. And it was, anybody there remember? It was to Stanford, right? It was in Steve Jobs, CEO of Apple Computers, and he said, "You've got to find what you love." And he talked about how he had lost his job because they hired someone at Apple Corporation. He began it with somebody else in a garage, and then they developed a business, then they hired someone, and then he lost his job. And he said, that was very devastating. But then he came upon a very important discovery. "Something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did. The turn of events at Apple had not changed one bit. I'd been rejected, but I was still in love. So I decided to start over." And he started a new computer company. Then he was hired. And so it's okay for Steve Jobs, and he's all set. But that isn't the point. The point is, you've got to find what you love. That was the end of the story. Was he was diagnosed with cancer, and then he said, "You know, this is something." He said when he was 17, and this would be like for the Flames. When he was 17, he read a quote that went something like, "If you live each day as if it were your last, someday you'll most certainly be right." And it made an impression on him. Someday. Someday, eventually, you keep on going, put one step in front of the other, each day, live it as if it were your last, you'll almost certainly be right. And so when he was diagnosed with a fatal disease, which turned out not to be, turned out there was surgery that could do it, he said, "If today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something." Say that again. "If today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And if the answer is no, and it becomes that way for several days in a row, and it keeps being that way, then he saw that as a call to find what he loves and what he does love and what he would want to do. And that was a big discovery. Find what you love. So that's essentially what Swedenborg was saying a long time ago, that charity, if we find what we love and we enjoy doing, and we have the good fortune to then be able to have remuneration for it, not just for its own sake, but for the sake of providing for ourselves the necessity of life, we are, and also if what we are doing provides a need to the general good of the whole society, then we are embodying charity. We are accomplishing what the Lord has as our goal, which is for each of us not to do charity, but to be charity, and to be charity by doing charity, by every day embodying what it is that we love most to do, and provided that it is not prohibited by the Decalogue, because the criminal element certainly, I'm sure, love to do what they're doing. But if we look to the Lord and shun evils that are outlined in the Decalogue as sins, he starts that all along. And that's where we started the week off, was with Reverend Ken Turley, which was that the first of charity is to look to the Lord and to shun evils as sins. And today I'm coming to the point where each and every day of our life, not merely in employment, but in everything that we do and say, and especially in our relationships with our significant others, with our families, with our extended family of Freiburg or the church or whoever it is that becomes our most important relationships, to be integrated into that fabric of that community by serving a use. And it is the heavenly goal that we all find our use and that we find a love of life from performing a use. I wanted to then have a quote from The Diversions of Charity. There are diversions of charity, which are the various delights and pleasures of the bodily senses, useful for the recreation of the mind. And he begins not with diversions, which would be cards, games, board games, singing, anything it is that's fun, miniature golf, going to Weir Beach, Weir's Beach, sliding down the slides, playing ultimate frisbee, volleyball. There is an affection in every employment, he says, and it strains the mind and keeps it intent upon its work or study. And I'd like to add the vocation of stagecoach driver. A couple of us went up Mount Washington yesterday, up the auto road. And some of you have driven up it. We allowed ourselves the pleasure of being driven in their van, called, used to be a stagecoach with horses, now it's a van. And there used to be six horses, and we don't know how many horses now, because that's what Steve said. He said, I didn't study my manual enough. I don't know how many horses are in here. But for him, there is an affection in every employment. It strains the mind. In other words, he obviously enjoyed being a stagecoach driver. I mean, he was talking about the change of the vegetation and the animal life, you know, from bears up to some little creeping things, and from big trees to is it deciduous trees, the fir trees, and then up to tundra. And he had it all. He knew it, and he enjoyed talking about it. And some of the passengers maybe wished he hadn't been talking so much. You know, keep your eye more on the road. You know, that would have been fun. But I had complete confidence that he did not want to die. And I've been in a situation where brakes were lost and means of stopping were lost and so forth. So. I figured that we'd be all right because Steve lied, I figured. I mean, a white lie. He said, this is my first day on the job. and then he said, but I've been up, I made one trip already, so we're probably pretty good. And he said, but I stayed up late last night. And he tried to get us worried a little bit to, I guess, enjoy the risk and the danger of what we're doing. But it was obvious that he was skilled in keeping his mind intent upon his work so that no matter how much he relaxed and appeared to be not focused on every stone, I was pretty sure he did not want to die. And so therefore, I could put my hands in his hands. But I imagine when the day is over that Steve must do something. Because his mind is so, Swedenborg talks about this, it's like a bow. I guess he was, I don't know whether he had been studying Ken's work, these bows. Is it like a bow? If you kept a bow, if you never, don't you release the strings? Because the idea is that if you keep that bow, if you were to keep it taut, it would eventually not serve very well. It would eventually lose, I think. It would lose its elasticity. And he talks about the mind would lose its elasticity, become dull. If we're just every day doing the same thing, especially if it is a challenge to us and we enjoy it and are intent and focused on it and really enjoy it, we need to then have a diversion. The old idea of working hard and playing hard. Thus, if the mind is not relaxed, it becomes dull, its desire flags, as salt that has lost its savor, so it has no pungency or relish or as a bended bow, which, unless it is unbent, loses the power that it derives from its elasticity. So just so the mind would be so without variety. So the diversions of charity, whatever it is that we find that relaxes us, and here is where he goes into one of those things like George was talking about, the goods of charity. It's a blank form into which we would put specifics. So he doesn't talk with much specificity, but says the ministries, functions, offices, and labors of everyone keep the mind upon the stretch, and then the diversions will then vary according to the interior affection within them. So a miniature golf isn't for everyone, is it? I like it once in a blue moon. But the whole idea behind the occupations and the diversions is that our whole day provides us opportunities to be an embodiment of charity, to live it out, to put flesh and bones on the skeleton of society, so that the fabric of society is enhanced by each doing what it is that they do best. I want to close with a refocus on the parable of charity that we had, that I read from Matthew 20. Do you remember that one? It was a perfect form of charity, but not from its natural or literal level, right? I like it because almost, you're a sophisticated audience, but almost anywhere I would read this, people would say, boy, I sure empathize with that fellow that thought he would get more. He was there, he got there at the beginning of the day, which would be like 6 o'clock in the morning, because, you know, it gets hot in the Holy Land, and you do a lot of your work at the beginning of the day, and he's working, and then here someone comes in from which we get the dub 11th hour Christians, you know. He came in at the end, and he got the same pay. Sense? How would it make sense? Well, William Worcester in his Sower, I took a look to get some ideas. I always like to refresh some ideas there. These laborers represent affections within ourselves, affections from charity, and they're going to do the uses of charity. And so it is that he put the example that the 11th hour labor is like those early affections of what is good that we get in childhood. And we go to school, then we go to college, and then we begin working. And these ideas seem so idealistic, kind of get set aside sometimes. But they need to be brought in too, so that our full quiver of arrows of charity is ready for us to use, so that it's an exaggeration for an effect. We were talking about that, a couple of us, that Swedenborg used hyperbole. The plucking out of the eye, all the exaggerations he would do for effect. Would be to challenge the audience to say, that isn't fair. And then to find out, well, how could it be fair if we apply it to the fact that we need to apply all of our talents? And so whatever it is, whether it's talents that we discovered early in life or later in life, we need to employ all of our abilities in our life of charity. That's what it means to me. I know there was some champing at the bits earlier in the week, and so I wanted to leave deliberately time for us to think about and reflect about not just charity as our daily life, but also anything other that might come in and impinge on this.
brought up about the diversions and the occupations.
I don't think that's on. Tap on it a bit, see if it goes. Can you tap on it? It's starting.
Good morning.
Not quite like this, but anyway, go ahead.
You have power?
Yeah, just go.
Okay. Just I wanted to reflect on the occupations and the diversions of charity, because it reminds me that the commandment is to love the neighbor as the self, not instead of the self, and that the diversions, if they keep your mind and your ability to be charitable and to be more of a blessing to others, that's loving yourself and preparing you to be more useful in loving the neighbor. And that's sometimes a part that we forget. We think that our diversions are selfish, but they're actually part of our health. So thanks for bringing that up.
Lee?
On the parable of the laborers and the hours, one thing that strikes me is that the intent of working has a lot to do with whether you are satisfied with what happened and what you got, quote unquote. The people who were first hired, their intent was obviously to get paid. And I suppose it probably was for most of them as well, being honest here. But if we think about do they have cause for grumbling, what is their goal? Is their goal to get paid, or is their goal to provide useful service? And it would be better to personalize that. Is our goal to get paid, or is it to provide useful service? Now, as long as we're here, we obviously do, in this culture, need to get paid or supported in some form or fashion, so it's not something to ignore. But on the other hand, if you get through a week of work and you think you deserve a bonus but you don't get one, if you're angry about that, you're probably focused more on the pay than you are on the work. And if, on the other hand, if you get through the week of work and the boss doesn't have enough to pay your whole paycheck but does the whole thing, and you're not angry, does part of it, you know, I'm only going to be able to give you 70% because our receipts were not good enough this week. It's kind of a tough way to run a business, but it happens sometimes. Now, if you're not angry about that, it's likely that you feel, I was providing a service this week anyway, and not getting paid is probably going to be tough, but I have satisfaction in what I've done this week. And so depending on what perspective you're looking at your work, it may not be all that crazy for him to not pay them any more when they've done more work. People who've done more work, from a spiritual perspective, have more satisfaction because they've accomplished more.
Dave?
You mentioned the phrase 11th hour Christians, and we can think of that parable, the workers, the last ones, that the reward, he's talking about the kingdom of heaven or heaven. And one thing in Swedenborg's teachings which has bothered me, where he seems to say it's impossible to have a deathbed confession. I'd like to think that we can't judge a person's change of heart, and maybe it's very rare, but if someone could have a change of heart and could be open to being retaught in the world of spirits, though it maybe is virtually impossible, I would like to think there is a possibility of being an 11th hour Christian and still being able to be saved in the world of spirits, and as Swedenborg's teachings.
I'm planning on it.
And myself, I'm trying to not to be too confirmed in anything where I'm open to being retaught, because I'm sure I have some things wrong, maybe more than some.
Well, in line with what both of you and Lee were saying, the people in the middle of the day, they were asked, why aren't you working? He says, well, no one hired us. It sounds like they had the intention to work, like folks that have their union card. They go down to the union hall and they really want to be hired, but they may not have a job that day, but they're waiting. Lee? And then Hunter.
I suppose on the, I don't think I want to count the seconds as to what second of your life it would be if you were doing a deathbed repentance, but it's a little bit more than 11th hour, I think. And I suppose that at that point, it depends on what you do next. One of the interesting things that Swedenborg says is death doesn't really change anything except that you're no longer here. He does say that your direction is fixed at that point, but if in fact you change direction in the last minutes of your life, that would be reflected in what you do next. And if you get into the spiritual world and at that point you have actually changed your mind, I don't see why you couldn't have a deathbed repentance. I suspect most of the time, though, you're going to go back to living the way you did before after you realize that your deathbed repentance can't do anything more for you. So, sure, it's possible, probably highly improbable, but what are you going to do next? That's going to determine whether it was real or not.
Hunter?
I was reflecting on what you were saying about choosing based on really loving what you do, the whole Steve Jobs thing. And I was thinking about a talk I heard last month by Michael Lerner of Tikkun. And he was talking about the difference between career and vocation and how our young people are being tracked into career and to think in terms of career. And career is all about me. Career is about how am I going to fulfill, you know, how am I going to make a lot of money? How am I going to move up the ladder? How am I going to, you know, provide, you know, three cars and, you know, a very large house and all of those things for my family, as opposed to vocation, which has to do with some combination of using one's gifts and at the same time being of service. And I think of Frederick Buchner's statement, calling is where my deep gladness meets the world's deep need. And then I found myself wondering, how do we help our young people? And by our, I don't only mean the young people in this denomination, but I mean the young people in this society, to think in terms of vocation rather than merely in terms of career.
George?
One of the ways I've come to see this reflected in the biblical story is in good old Genesis 12, the call to Abram, which says, he's promised you're going to become a great nation. And they promptly, the story then sets out how to become great, and how to become a lot of people, how to become rich, how to become powerful, and so on and so forth, neglecting the fact that the call to Abram then, I think, immediately says, now this is what I mean by becoming a great nation, be a blessing. And there was I was touched by an account, I may have mentioned it last week, of a doctor who spent a week with the Mercy ship, the hospital ship, and after the tsunami, and saw the care that was being given and what was being done, and said, I was proud of my country. I thought in doing that, we were a great nation. We were being a blessing.
Well, let us use the time available to us now then as a diversion. Thank you for your kind attention.